Levels okay, you think?
I think levels are okay. You said we had to remember the intro. What intro was that?
Well, just announcing our names and what show people are listening to. We always...
All right. Well, this is Ken.
And this is Brent, and you're listening to Gappage Episode 3.
Gappage Episode 3. Our fourth episode, but it's 3, because we started at 0.
We started at 0, and to make matters more confusing, there was also one that we recorded and didn't release because there was too much noise on
it. That's right, and I believe we have a gold mine. Didn't we have some gold? What was that? Dr. Dave Broadbent.
We have an episode 0.
We have, yeah. Well, we did release 0.
I don't think it's released.
No, that hasn't been. No, but we're holding that. That was some gold. Yeah.
That's why I have trouble with the numbering.
In case our listenership drops, you know.
Yeah. I can't see why it would.
No, I can't see why
it would. I'm awesome, you're awesome, this sounds like a great podcast.
I can only see it going up from here. Well, we got, 3 listeners now, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
It's got to go up. And the beer of choice for this episode is a Molson product, Rickard's White.
Is this, did you get a fondness for this at PAB? Is
that this was the PAB sponsor, and apparently PodCamp Toronto, too, they sponsored...
this past year?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Somebody said, "Oh, they did." Yeah, because they had a beer night. Remember?
Yeah, they did. I totally got all messed. I had no money at that PodCamp Toronto. Thought it was the different.
Well, you don't need money at a free beer.
No
tasting.
Yeah, but I also had a bunch of other stuff going on that weekend. Yeah, well, all I know is the guys from This Week in Geek called me up and they're like, "Hey, we're in town." I'm like, "What are you doing in town a week early? You got some sort of event? Or what are you talking about? It's PodCamp." So I'm just terrible about that. And then for PAB, I thought PAB was a week. I thought PAB was a week earlier than I.
You got a piss poor record when it comes to PodCamps. Pretty poor.
Yeah.
Leave it. You might want to lean in a little closer. Okay. If you're going to lean, I would suggest leaning this way rather than that way. You know?
Okay.
I'll back up if I'm in your face.
All right. Well, I just don't want to appear too standoffish.
No. So everybody's comfortable, ready to go. We're actually starting now. Beautiful view. We're recording in Brent's studio here, overlooking Lake Ontario.
Yeah, it's...
What, about 10 miles away?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's far enough to not get the smell of the lake, I guess.
No. And a few topics we're going to cover today. I think one of the things, we may as well tell the lead. Some podcasts like to do this. Tell the people in advance what they're going to hear.
It is important.
You know?
Most times we haven't figured it out. But
I think we're going to talk about budgeting a little.
Yep. It's probably a good topic.
That singer who died recently, apparently a lot of people knew about him. Michael something.
Michael Jensen.
Jensen. He was a dancer, too. Singer and a dancer.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about him. And then, I had another topic. I can't remember now.
We had Twitter?
Twitter. That was it.
Twitter has...
I said I'd been to my first tweet. Do you want to start with Twitter?
Well, Twitter got me a job.
Twitter got you a job.
We can start with Twitter.
All right.
I lost my job about 5 weeks ago, and I sent off a message on Twitter, sort of announcing that I was looking for a job, and someone sent me a DM and asked me to send in my resume, and now I'm now he's my boss. So that worked out. It took several weeks for that to all get squared away, but that was the first message that I'd sent. That was the first person that got in touch with me after I lost my job, and as it turned out, I didn't have to do any more job hunting. I just had to wait for them.
That's a real good use of Twitter.
Yeah,
I mean,
that proves that I've been the idea that I had for how you're supposed to use Twitter, the way I've been using it for the past 2-3 years or whatever, sort of worked out.
It's an effective tool.
It's an effective tool if you use it properly.
And of course, this is all part of just this new. What are we calling it? New media.
Social media.
Everybody uses social media. Now, I read a very good article, and of course, I can't remember who wrote it, but I found it on Twitter. Somebody sent the link, saying that, what are you calling this social media for? Everything is social media. There's nothing that's not social media. And instead of applying this term to the technology that's out there, is a bit of...
I think it's social media because lately, the way software has been working is focusing inherently on like the social connections between people. And... Yeah. I think that's why it's social media. Yes, it's social media. I think the word social comes from the social networking thing.
And I guess the one thing, certainly I went to my first tweet up last week. And, of course, the thing that struck me about it was there was no recorders, no podcasters, wow. Nobody with a microphone.
Yeah.
And just everybody had their cell phone or their BlackBerry, and they were checking these the whole time.
That's the thing about a tweet-up. You'll go, yeah. And you won't actually have a conversation with anyone because everyone will be Twittering.
They were doing that. But actually, I found it interesting. I there were people there who I hadn't met, but I felt I already knew.
Yes, even though that's with that sense.
And then got into some actual good conversations with people, and then went back home and followed them all, and allowed them to follow me, because I blocked my listeners.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, or followers. That's the one thing I really like, and I don't know why everybody doesn't do that.
Yeah, and
so I don't get any spam. People complain about all this shit they get in there, and you know, flooded. And even the number of people who I follow, there's still too many to read. So I don't know why people would want to have theirs open and get just this endless stream of crap coming their way.
Yeah, I don't know. I like having mine open.
But do you have filters in? Like, okay, you got a special column for your friends, like in TweetDeck.
Actually,
I have one string.
I just saw that TweetDeck now has a feature where you can synchronize your columns between multiple computers, and I've been waiting for that for a long time,
okay.
So I might go back to it. But I really, for Twitter, what I've mostly been using it for is just replies and DMs, and I'll have like all my friends, and if I see something interesting there, I'll reply to
it. But you post all your shit up there, and you're hoping other people are following yours, right?
Yeah.
Or do you do that?
No,
Facebook as well?
I do post a lot of stuff. Right now, the computers that I have, I don't have the resources that I had 6 months ago to manage the amount of information. So I certainly need to find something better. But you're right, I do tweet a lot, and I had a bit of a discussion with someone about that at work, because she said that she doesn't tweet, and I said I do, or she does, but not a lot, and I say I do like too many in a day, and I'm pretty unapologetic about that.
Well, most of yours are links though, right, to other things.
Yeah,
most of the things you tweet, or some people are doing, they're just doing the hellos to friends, or they're having little conversations going, and I kind of like it for the conversations. Like, I always, the first thing I look, is there anybody either DMing me.
I do have conversations, though.
Yeah.
I have a lot of extended conversations. That's what a lot of people get pissed off at, you know, all these irrelevant messages that, you know, don't apply to them. But I also do share links, and what I've turned Twitter into is what my podcast used to be, because I didn't have time to do the Closet Geek Show as it was when it first started. I was in university. I had time to research useless shit and talk about it ad nauseum, but I couldn't get it together. But in this way, I can still talk to the same people I spoke to. I can share links to music, so that's sort of like playing music.
Right.
And I still share, you know, interesting links I see. And the way I got it set up is that in the programs I'm using, I use Twitter feeds, for example. That's a program where you can point an RSS feed at a Twitter account.
Yeah.
And it'll update whenever there's new things, or it'll go look every half hour, every hour at the feed, and when there's something new, it'll post it as a tweet.
Automatically.
You don't
even have to do it.
Right, so that's... Ooh. Well, you have to put something in the RSS feed, so those things where it's, you know, I have some comment about some article I read with a link after it, that's me and my feed reader, and I click a button that says share this, and I change the title of it so it's a comment.
Yeah, yeah.
And then... That I don't see why that's...
That's all right.
That's making use of the way Twitter's supposed to work.
Well, of course. And if it's something you actually want to share...
Yeah, so, and it's not me spamming, hey, it's like me writing useless blog posts. I'm sending people to other places.
Right. I like the way people actually also post pictures. They'll talk about something where they are.
Yeah.
Now, Tim Coyne, whenever he does it, he always posts a map, his location. It's always somewhere in Los Angeles. He's drinking coffee with some babe or something.
Wow.
I'm like, well, okay. But I want to see the picture. I want to see the babe. I want to see, you know.
I want to see the babe.
So I think that's it. Now, have you ever used Nambu?
Nambu
is like TweetDeck. It's a new one that came out.
I have heard
of it. It's really nice, very colorful, but it's still pretty buggy. And so I keep quitting it and going back to TweetDeck.
Yeah. Well, at the job that I had two jobs ago, I had like my own laptop, and it was fairly good. The place that I went to one job ago, I had a laptop and it was really slow and it could like barely run TweetDeck and that sort of thing.
Oh.
And now at my new job, I have a laptop that I can't install things to, and my personal computer is 10 years old, so...
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, it's a piece of shit. So I'm using Twitter on the Twitter website at this point. So when I get upgraded, I will go back to better managing my information. But, yeah, I feel like I'm not using those services to the best of their ability. I'm missing out on things.
You need a technology upgrade.
I need a fatter wallet.
Yeah, that helps. The nice thing about all this, of course, is it does lead to real face-to-face encounters. And that's the thing when people used to have this excuse. I don't think people say it as much now, but they were a while ago. But, oh, it's just wankers alone, lonely people in their basements, you know, doing nothing.
Yeah.
But there's more and more and more people. Hey, I'm going to a concert tonight, or Jay Muna's playing. Let's see you there.
Right.
And it's a wonderful tool for people actually getting together in real life.
Yeah.
So I actually enjoyed the tweet up I went to, and I talked with Eden Spodek, who I don't often get a chance to, and Connie, who's everywhere, was there, Daniel Rossi, and then other people who I hadn't met, including the Molson guy, whose beer we're drinking. Molson Ferg.
Yeah.
And
his first name is Molson?
No, but he uses that on his Twitter account.
Oh, okay.
And then another photographer. I had a great chat with him. So I was kind of impressed, and I actually might even go to another tweet up, even though I feel I'm a podcaster, not a Twitter.
Well, they all blend in together.
They do. There's an overlap. The bloggers, the podcasters, and in fact, there really aren't tweeters.
Well, this sort of ties in. I read an article this week that sort of ties into, I think, what you're talking about, how, you know, there's tweet ups and there's the bloggers and the podcasters, but we all sort of know and talk to each other. There's an article I read, I shared it on Twitter. I can forward it over to you.
Or post a link on our show.
Oh, good call. Yeah, you know? I have not been keeping up. I could have gone back. With all this extra time, I could have gone back and had some good show notes with the not having a job. My bad.
That's true.
But this article was called The Secret Social Media Fight Club, and sort of how this. There's this phenomenon that, you know, people will go to these tweet-ups and stuff, and just by having this one thing in common, this one way of maybe not even thinking, but at a general sense, sharing these sort of little pithy messages and not thinking it's stupid sort of connects.
Was the word, did you say pithy? Pithy messages?
Yeah.
I think pithy is the right word, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
But,
just for our listeners.
Yeah,
in
it's
case
the,
you didn't hear.
Oh, good call. The sort of this Fight Club sort of sense, and the writer sort of spoke about, you know, how near the end of Fight Club, and, you know, when that movie starts off, it's just Ken Norton and Edward Norton and Brad Pitt, and then as the movie goes on, they go off to these other cities, and you see like a cook behind, you know, at a restaurant, he's got like a bruise on his face, and, you know, they look at you and they see you're kind of banged up, and they sort of exchange this look, and they treat that person a little better. It's that same sort of thing where you're like, well, I don't read your blog, but I sort of know who you are because my friends talk to you, and because of that, it's
and that's this widening the circle and expanding the tribe, and this is a good thing.
Yeah,
this is where it really does deserve the title social media. You know,
doing podcasting and sort of making an effort to actually, you know, meet you and other people and go to the pub meetups and stuff, that has I would be a whole lot more boring person now had I not started my podcast.
That's hard to believe.
Thanks. Had I not started my podcast.
Yeah.
Because I know you, I know all these people. I don't know, I'd probably be playing far too much Xbox.
Yeah, well, no, the thing is, that's so true, and this is what blows me away, and I think some people still who aren't doing any of these things, they don't get it. I can't believe how many new friends I have, and good friends, people I actually care about, and want to see and look forward to seeing, through joining this game, through getting out there in this, I guess we call it the digital world, social media, whatever you want to call it.
I can't
believe, because it's hard to make friends.
Yeah.
And then suddenly in this world, it's easy to make friends.
It's broadcasting. I like to think over time, your Twitter or whatever it is you use in your podcast sort of broadcasts your personality, your character.
Yeah.
And people don't know you in a personal sense, but they still know who you are in terms of...
Well, depending on your podcast. Because they know a lot more about you than they normally would.
That's true.
Just through, you know, meeting casually once or twice.
True.
You do get people. I think that's especially true of podcasting, like, but that's my
bias. Well, I mean, using podcasting as an example, the first PodCamp Toronto, Sean from the BFF show.
Sean, the guy out in Edmonton.
Out in Edmonton,
our friend, the BFF show.
Well, he stayed...
One of our listeners.
One of our listeners, that's why I mentioned. But he stayed with me, you know, and we had talked a bit, and really, until that sort of initial, he sent me a message, seeing, you know, if he could crash in my place in Toronto, you know, we really didn't have a whole lot of, like, IM conversations between the two of us. It was just, you know... talking through his podcast or through each other's podcast, and we both felt that we knew who the other person was, even though we hadn't really spent a lot of time talking.
Well, that's partly how you and I met too, was through with him, because the three of us were hanging out in the street corner lighting a joint at one point in Toronto, and my trip that I mentioned that I just took out west with my son recently, we stopped at him, and I felt I knew him well enough that, hey, here's a guy I'm going to just call and say, hey, we're coming.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we stayed at his place, he was set up, and we had an absolute blast. And it was like somebody I knew really, really well.
It's like visiting an old friend.
So it's beautiful. I asked if he had any comments or questions for us, but he never DM'd me back. This is full circle here on Twitter, because just before I came, he said, hey, at 4:30, I'm meeting Brent, you got anything? And maybe he wasn't online.
Maybe he didn't have anything to say to me, because I haven't left a voicemail.
Well, that's it. He haven't. But anyway, forget about them. They take up too much of our show time. I don't know how they worm their way in every time. I felt sorry for Mikey, though. He's pretty rough on Mikey.
He does.
He's brutal. But that's another
story. I'm glad that Sean did a show with him and not me, because I wouldn't want to be as wicked.
Oh, no, you wouldn't want to be that. Ooh, God, he's just ruthless. Now, so we can come back to that topic or whatever, but the other one we were going to talk about, if you're ready, was on budgeting. You're looking at our time?
Yeah.
We got enough time. We'll just keep talking until we run out. Although I do think this, we should tell folks now, this is going to be a one-hour show, because some people go on like an hour and 27 minutes. Mike, well, he'll do that, because he doesn't care. He puts all their crap, their outtakes, he'll just throw it on the end.
Yeah.
And as if people are going to be interested. You know, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Yeah. But he doesn't care. But we do care about our listeners.
Yeah.
I want that to be clear. Budgeting. I budgeted when I went to Europe in 1969. That is 40 years ago. I had my first budget, and I bought Europe on $5 a day. That book, Eric Frommer, the book was out, and you could live on $5 a day. A bed and breakfast place in England was £1 a night, which was $2.40, and the rest of it was, you know, you bum beer, you bum drinks.
Yeah.
Literally, I lived on that. And every day, I knew if I spent more than $5, I was cutting a day out of my time in Europe.
Right.
By the time I got to Morocco, I was down $3 a day, you know.
Yeah.
Not counting what I paid for dope. But I was on a budget. I have not had a budget in my life since then, for work or for personal life.
Oh.
I can't budget. It just seems like, why would I do that to myself?
I was hoping you might be able to convey some budgetary wisdom
to
me.
No. I just say, get out there and live and do your best. And be practical. I'm practical. But the idea of, you know, doing this budget, I see so many people sweating over, oh, well, we can't. We can only go out once this week. I don't live my life that way. I just, if I want to go out, I go out.
I went through a budget once with my mom. Since, you know, going out on my own kind of thing, I struggled keeping it together. And I just couldn't wrap my head around, it seemed like the budget was way too restrictive of, like you said, like, hey, I want to, you know, go out and meet some friends kind of thing. And then, oh, no, I already went out yesterday, so I can't go hang out.
You're only allowed to go out once a week.
It didn't work with me. I have another friend that manages to still have money to do these serendipitous things, and he's, you know, he manages to manage his money pretty well, and he's offered to, you know, sort of do my budgets and stuff, help me figure this shit out, because he just sees how bad I am. He's like, he's like, you make more than I do. I don't know why you never have money.
Well, and it strikes me, because when I meet up with you, you always seem to not have money. But I think you can be frugal without necessarily having to beat yourself up and go through this, put yourself in a cage. I think budgeting to me is like putting yourself in a cage. And that's the last thing I want to do myself. There's enough restrictions on our lives already. Being frugal means, you know, I only buy things that are on sale. Mm. That's the thing. That's the first rule. Anything
like
you buy, you can
things.
Find it on sale, you know.
Yeah.
Almost anything. You can get some sort of a deal. That's That's a given. I think that's the only one you need. So, there's the end of our budgeting talk, I guess.
Well that was gappage.
Not much more to say. Some people talk about it, live by it, you know, but I think they always sound miserable. They always sound, you know. I guess you want to, I think you have to be realistic. Say you're a young married couple and you want to buy a house. You can't go out and buy $500,000 home if neither of your incomes are ever going to get near to even come up with a down payment, unless somebody's paying it for you. So you got to look in the range that you think you can afford. So you have to have some common sense.
Yeah.
You know? And if you're raising kids, geez, then you're maybe not going to buy two cars or a sports car. You're going to get a van, you know, all that stuff. But I don't think that's budgeting. I think that's just common sense.
Oh.
All right, end of that discussion. Fuck, I didn't like budgeting anyway. Do you need
depressing.
A pause so you can get a beer?
I think I'm running out of beer.
Okay, folks, we're going to pause right here, if you don't mind. Thank you. Well, that's the way things go in the podcasting world sometimes. We shut the mic off and had our best conversation yet. I mean, you missed the gold.
I didn't think that anyone...
Well, it was very interesting because it was a whole new world I never heard about. I was fascinated by the story.
Oh,
so we're going to have to go back. Of course, now we're going to have to fake it. You know,
this
is going to be really difficult.
I've had this conversation with several
people. So give us the summary, what it was you're talking about. And maybe I'll try and recapitulate and you correct me. You were telling about some kind of online comic that you've been following, called Penny Arcade?
Correct.
Penny Arcade. And I had never heard of it. And they have a big conference out in
Seattle
every year.
Yeah.
And it's one you would like to go to. And your line, which really caught my attention, was, these people are... So much like me,
they're more me. He said that sounds like, you know, these people are you, and those people might be more me than I can handle.
More me than I can handle, the kind of people who would want to go to this thing, geeky thing. Yeah. But the idea of the way it was arranged, of a convoy of people, is fascinating. Do you want to tell that part?
Yeah, well, this convention, maybe just to back up a little bit, this convention is like a video game conference for fans. There wasn't really anything like that before, so these guys who run the comic organize that. And one of the ways that I've been considering heading out to that convention, it's in Seattle, and it's, you know, end of the summer, early September sort of thing, is going, making a road trip of it. And that would be quite the road trip because it's all the way to Seattle from here. But the really interesting thing to me is on the forums for this Penny Arcade website, the community assembles a convoy plan. So they arrange dates and times for approximately when you need to meet, and, you know, we're going to meet at this truck stop, we're going to meet at this parking lot, all these different places to meet along the way, and they map it out from, you know, up to, you know, Canada, all the way down to Florida along the eastern seaboard, and all the way across the continent.
So there'll be any number of routes going
across
the country.
Any number of routes and any number of meetup points, and then you join this convoy, and by the time you start approaching Seattle, there's so many geeks on the highway on the way to, you know, the same event that you can pull out your Game Boy and play, you know, a multiplayer game of Mario Kart with someone that's a couple cars down, because it's just solid traffic of a bunch of people being geeks.
Now, of course, a lot of our environmentalists and bike purists and so on wouldn't be thrilled about this idea, but we don't have to listen to them.
What's wrong with carpooling? That's not
carpooling. You were talking about a long line of cars going by.
Well, yeah, but so if you have thousands of people all headed to one point in Seattle,
you are going
to
carpool.
At the end of it, you're going to have thousands of cars.
Yeah. And you are going to, people are going to be sharing.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a brilliant idea, and I think it's another use. And I guess maybe that gets back to the concept of how people are self-organizing around tribes. It's not your racial background. It's not your religion. It's not the color of your skin. It's not the, faction of any particular church. It's the things you're interested in that people find themselves and find they have a lot in common. And,
yeah.
I think that's fascinating.
I think that's I think that point there is why people keep talking about social media and why it's distinct from how media used to work. Because how media used to work is corporate and one message to a whole bunch of people instead of a whole bunch of people sending a whole bunch of messages to a whole bunch of, you know, people that they know.
Yeah.
So I think that's what makes it social. You're right that media was social or conversation has always been social, but
I guess the world is more and more mixed. Anyway, there is no longer any homogeneity in Toronto or in any North American city. But at these gatherings, if I reflect back to the gathering I was just at, the tweet up, it would have been a real mix of people of different backgrounds and so on who just have common interests. And I talked to one guy forever about cinema, and it was, you know, he was just into it in depth, and somebody else would connect on that.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And so this is, again, these things are tools for helping people. Fine. So, and again, you'd make all new friends if you ever did manage to get out to this conference.
Oh, yeah.
You'd meet all kinds of people.
Have a whole new social network to, and the real kind of social network, not Facebook. I mean, like an actual network of people who know each other. That's what they are.
It's funny how Facebook is looking more and more
like Twitter
bad these days. Oh. Well, really, and yet maybe it was one of the steps along the way that had to happen because there seems
bad?
So much. Well, I mean, it kind of phony and kind of, you know, people were sort of collecting friends.
Yep.
I don't think there's a whole lot of real communication. A couple of old high school friends meet up
but
with people.
Facebook wasn't even the first one to do that. That's what killed the first social network was Friendster. And that crashed specifically. It crashed because people were just adding tons of friends and the system crashed and couldn't handle it. Friendster didn't really do a whole lot more than let you connect to people and send the messages, but
there's another topic I was thinking about. I was going to talk about it on my own podcast, but may as well do it here because it's related. And that's when you might have a number of followers, say in Twitter, you'd have a whole lot of followers.
Yep.
But then you can subdivide and you can have your own groups. It could be family or it could be friends. And I think there's a lot of people who claim to be friends with so many people, but really, if you were able to look at their desktop, you'd find out, no, it's only they've got their certain friends, and you're probably not on that list, you know. So there's a certain amount of, it's not hypocrisy, it's just practicality, that everybody wants to be friendly about it, but, in fact, we only have so much tolerance for so many people. We cannot be friends with everybody and give our full selves to everybody, because it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You really do have to refine it eventually.
Yeah, there was an article, I downloaded this book from Cory Doctorow. He's an author.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the writers on Boing Boing as well, if you know that blog.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was like a collection of articles and stuff that he's written about copyright, and that's sort of like that's his cause. And he was talking about, you know, copyright and the music industry and how that all works with the web, and he wrote an article on this sort of problem with social networking and this problem with calling that connection, making a friend with someone, because it's not a friend, but it is a connection of some sort, and how that there's these social interactions that play into it, and you know, you could you'd have people on your Facebook profile, and you know, you got, you know, some friends that, you know, that you go to Burning Man with, and they're on Facebook, and you know, maybe you're a grade school teacher or something, and then your boss asks to go on your friends list, and you don't want to say no. You can't say no to your boss asking to be your friend, so you add them to your list, and then all of a sudden they, through the, you know, the friend of a friend connection, they see the pictures of your I liked the language that he used. He said pictures of your friends' painted genitals flapping across the playa.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, and
this problem is going to happen more and more.
Well, it might not. But the thing is, maybe people get wise that, because even the bosses are going to have flapping genitals, you know. And so I think people are going to be a little bit more forgiving if a person. I think we have to recognize that those days of that corporate culture are gone.
Yeah.
You don't expect the guy to be that guy in the white suit or white shirt and tie.
Yeah. You can
which
do
is
that
gone
way
anyway all the time.
You don't
people
have to
are
be
human.
That way all the time.
And the real person of value is going to be the real authentic human. The person who is who they are and is comfortable with who they are and, yeah. and fits in with different groups this, and across platforms.
One
and
of
so
the things
on.
I've noticed with this is that these things force you. You know, I first sort of noticed it with blogging and then seeing the sort of corporate blogs or company blogs or CEO blogs, and then it would come out that the CEO doesn't actually write his own blog, and then it's a yeah. big public relations disaster. These tools force you to be yourself. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't be a big asshole on Twitter and Facebook, and you know, be a big arrogant jackass, and then be all friendly and stuff, and then real life when you meet someone, because there'll be a disconnect and people will call you on it.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, even if you are a bit of an asshole, you still have to own up to it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably true. That's probably true. He does get into a difficult area of this sort of, gee, like I deal with two personalities, the Scarborough dude and Ken. And it's getting harder and harder to keep them separate.
Oh, no.
But I like being... Well, because, you know, people go on Facebook because they know me now. It's really Ken. Okay. And they'll make a joke, hey, I heard your last podcast. Well, I don't really necessarily want people talking to Ken, who are a lot of work people or people I know through my Canada Japan Society.
Yep.
So I don't know what to do about that. And I think maybe eventually just forget about it and just, you know, just understand, hey, you know, pick and choose who you want and... if you have a problem with that, that's your problem.
Well, and I think people also understand that Scarborough Dude is a character. No one's gonna... a boss would be, or a person would be remiss in thinking that Kafluey podcast,
yeah.
that you know, he's Vinny in real life, because he's a character. And
yes.
I think, in a certain sense, Scarborough Dude is a... The parts of Scarborough Dude are you, but some
yeah.
of those parts, you know, amplified a bit, and there's some, not acting, but there's some...
Yeah, it is.
You're playing a part.
It's role-playing, sure.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah. All right, good. All right, let's park that then. we were going to get on to the other topic, if we've done that.
That dead guy?
That dead guy, Michael Jackson.
Is that his name?
That's his name. And I made a podcast the day after, and I'm not going to release it now because I was so angry. And I was angry at the people who I thought were really being hard on him. And I thought, hey, he's human, he's frail, he's weak. Why hold him up to such high standards? And these people were saying, oh, he's not so great, you know, he didn't do all this. And I'm just feeling compassion for him as just a human being. He was thrust into this thing. He did an amazing job. He put together excellent songs. He was a fantastic performer. What more do we demand of these people? Yeah, he was fairly... He had a rough childhood. He had a difficult life.
Yeah.
He was a lonely, sensitive man. So why beat up on the guy, you know? And I think a lot of people were, or just believe verbatim, oh, he's a child molester and can't get away with it, you know.
Since you brought that up, I do have a particular point on that whole child molester thing.
Go ahead.
Having seen it a million times on TV in the last few weeks of and not having anything else to think about, I devoted some time to working this out. This man was someone that was thrust into the spotlight from a very early age.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand how he never really had a childhood. And I can understand how, as an adult, he would try and spend most of his time with children in order to try and recapture something that he'd lost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he named his ranch Neverland, for God's sake. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's something there.
Yeah.
But, and it's certainly weird for someone of his age to, you know, be sleeping in a bed with young boys and stuff, but because he grew up in a different circumstance and because his life is
unreal,
and
yeah.
I don't think I'm not certain, but I don't immediately think that even though that there were children in his bed that he was doing anything untowards, because
yeah,
if I mean, I'm not a psychologist, I don't know, but if you're a man that didn't have a childhood and all these sort of things, if you didn't grow up the way a normal person grows up, then there's going to be something broken with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what it was, that he just, it was just broken. He was just spending time with, I don't think necessarily that there was anything sexual happening there.
Not necessarily. I think we're on the same wavelength on this. Yeah. So first of all, that wasn't proven. It was tossed out of, or it wasn't tossed out of court, but he wasn't proven, wasn't found guilty. I think the second thing was, if he was, like, suddenly there's this tremendous revulsion. Oh, you can't do it. But there's something kind of arbitrary about it, because the law has sort of made these ages of consent. And it's quite arbitrary. Mm. And this is given, okay, in the year 2010, here's the year. If the kid's 16, maybe you can touch him. If he's 15, you can't. Or whatever, 18, or whatever it is you can do or you can't do. And it's really a social construct. And people who get uptight just based on that, where are your judgments coming from? Because you're following because the legal system says this? Or did he really, even if he did, say he touched a 13-year-old child's genitals, he didn't necessarily hurt that child. There are brutal, brutal, horrible, horrific things that are ugly people are doing all the time, every day, all over the world. Throwing acid in people's faces because the girl looked at another man, These people, punish them. I have hatred for them. What he probably did wasn't an act of torture, cruelty, brutality. It might have been he crossed a line that we've established as a line. Had he lived as an entertainer 2,000 years ago in the Roman Empire, people would have thought nothing of it at all. This is an arbitrary judgment we're making, whether or not he did it, And for people to take this stand, he's a child molester and he's trying to buy his way out,
I don't think so.
I don't accept that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to hear we're sort of in agreement on that.
Yeah, and my brother and I were talking about this. He did do a lot for music.
He did, and he did a lot for people all over the world.
Yeah. Well, music videos as we know them, as he's younger than I am, all the music videos that we know of, how they existed, he did that. He started that. The reason why music videos aren't just people standing on a stage playing a song with a video camera pointed at them is because he decided, why can't you just make it a movie and have the song playing?
Yeah.
And things like that, and the dancing. And we've been listening to Michael Jackson songs way too much. Dirty Diana is our number one most listened to song according to our media player right now. So that's how bad it's gotten. But
he took these talents he had and he put them to good use and he made the most. And what I liked is that this is all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
People love the man. And to me, it's like we were talking about earlier, are people rallying around either a comic or a podcast or something else. Here are people worldwide, rich and poor, who rallied around Michael Jackson and his music. And to me, that's a good thing when that happens. And I watched the whole funeral service.
I have yet to watch that.
And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was tastefully done. And I was also encouraged the fact, they did that in such a short time. They pulled it together. And it was tasteful. It was good. And I was surprised there were so many people on Twitter saying, I'll have nothing to do with it. The media's blown it all out of proportion. He's not so great. And, okay.
Well, I made more than a couple glib tweets about it. Because someone said to me, someone said something along the lines of the play off the Beatles thing that Michael Jackson is bigger than Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And I said something to the effect of, apparently both love the little children. And that is glib and offensive, but
you couldn't resist it.
I couldn't resist. No. Are you kidding?
No. But the thing is, I think there were a lot of cheap shots taken, but I hope in the end that people recognized, if you look at anybody's life under a microscope, we're all perverts. We're all disgusting creatures.
Yeah,
you can't watch somebody when they're alone in the dark. They're not nice to look at.
Yeah.
And to sort of hold him up because he's famous to some other higher standards is totally unfair.
That's always how it is, though.
People do, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, have we done him?
I think Michael...
We don't have a whole lot of gappages this year. The only gappage is the amount of time between shows, but,
I think so. I think that's what we're...
We might have a problem here. Synchronicity or something.
I guess, and that's why we're friends.
There must be something we disagree on.
We'll have to think about things that we contradict.
This show could be grinding to a halt. This is... we might be in trouble. garbage. Can you think of anything offhand?
Jeez.
I don't know.
I was hoping that you'd have some budgetary advice to convey.
Yeah, no, I do mean be practical.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not.
That's it. But I said that, and I went out and bought a brand new Mazda, you know, or a 2009, because I liked it. And I had the line of credit, sure, I'll take it. And I know I could have gone and got a car for half the price, a car that was going to serve me just as well.
Right, right.
But life is short.
Yeah.
Life is short. Well, and I really think you've just got to be, I think the message is just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a second kick at the can.
Yeah.
It doesn't come back. That was a poem I recited at PAB. I tried to get it out. The message was, hey, you've only got one shot at this life. And if you're going to piss it away worrying about this or that, you're fucking yourself in the ass. It's just a dumb thing to do.
Right, yeah. It's
maybe fucking yourself in the ass isn't a dumb thing to do. I don't know.
Well, going back, it depends on your taste.
It does, yeah. It's a matter of taste.
We're all perverts in our own way.
Yeah. So, all right. We need another pause in there then and see if we can think of a
gaffage. I think that would be a good call. Because
all right.
We're at
we'll just pause. Yeah. So, folks, you don't mind. We're gonna find out if there's anything we disagree on just to
give
you a little more meat. Talk to you later. Yeah, we're back. And just like before, the best conversation we had is the one we had drinking our beer when we weren't recording. But we decided we'd go back and revisit that topic, too. And it's about, I just found out tonight that Brent went through private school. And this is so different from the education I had and my own kids are having. And I'm intrigued by that, because I always think private school is just for the richer people, that's an elite. I also think it's very unfair, because absolutely you get a better education in a private school than you will through the public system. And yet the proletariat in me, the socialist, wants to say we should have the best public system, that any kid going through the public system will have the same opportunities as anybody else. But that's just not true.
The public system is what it is, though. It's not going to suddenly get an influx. Like, I'm not... How would the non-existence of private schools...
Well, Because private schools
don't get government funding.
Well, my argument is private schools have always been better and continue to be better, whereas public schools are steadily going downhill and eroding. And the education I had in a public school back in the 1950s and 60s, I graduated in 1966, was a very good education. Got me into university, and we covered everything we needed. Society was different then. I went to a school where it was all white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, up a suburb of Montreal under the Protestant School Board of Greater Montreal. So nobody was dealing with ESL. Nobody was dealing with behavioral problems in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Those things were almost non-existent. The teachers could concentrate on educating you. Every parent was involved. So it doesn't compare to the societal situation we're in today. But when I look at the education my kids are getting, there's gaping holes in it. There's some shitty teachers out there. Neither of my children have anywhere near, I don't think, as good an education through the public system as I did. So, number one, it's gone downhill. The funding has been pulled away.
Right.
And there are other issues. We're a multicultural nation, and so teachers' energies are being put towards treating people who've just been in 12 months from Afghanistan.
How's that a fault?
It's not a fault of the public. I can't blame.
What I'm saying is, it's not like comparing it to private health care.
What I'm saying is the gap is widening.
Okay. Yes.
And that anybody who has the money to put their children now, even more so than before, through a private school is going to have a huge advantage when it comes to work, career prospects, the university they get into, their whole future, more so. In other words, we're dealing with greater inequalities than we should be.
One of the things that didn't pan out for me from private school is that the idea was going to private school, you'd have this network of people for all time to...
This old boys type
Old boys sort of thing. And near as I can tell, that's for all the cool kids. I was a nerd. I didn't have a whole lot of friends, and...
Okay.
And I don't know, and maybe that's just me being a big nerd complaining about that, but that's how I saw it. Like, All that is just the popular kids still being friends with each other when they're older.
So you're saying even within the private school system, there was still there's discrimination, there's still an elite.
Yeah.
Elite amongst the elite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I knew kids there that, like, I knew my mom had a job, and you know, a lot of that went to help me go to school. I had friends that, you know, their mom had a job, and the money she made went entirely to their school kind of thing. But then on the other hand, at graduation, there, you know, when I graduated, there's someone that got a VW, what's the blood, the buggy looking? Yeah, the bug. They got a bug for Christmas with a big pink bow on, or not for Christmas, for graduation with a big pink bow. So it's like there's a real range of...
So I guess the issue then is maybe it's not even the education system, it's just a question of wealth, period. There are rich people who are going to have an easier time.
I think
get the jobs and have the connections. Like, for example, summer jobs. I can't get summer jobs for my kids, although my son has one. Because I'm not really connected, I'm not in the workforce. Whereas other people, well, if you're well off, you know somebody who's going to hire your son and get a very decent job for him. And
yeah, I guess it depends on what you do. I mean, I lucked out. I got to work summers, or not summers, but I got to work... like March break and stuff like that at my dad's place. But part of that was I was a computer guy and they needed computer stuff done. So what's
I thought we had an argument going here, but I guess we don't. So your discussion was you went to a private school system, but you really didn't benefit all that much from it.
No, I went to private school. I know I got a great education. I know it helps me think of things in a different way because I got this holistic education.
Okay.
So, yeah, it does teach you better, but I think that idea of, like, a old boys network and that sort of thing is a bit of a fallacy.
Okay, but would you say that you had an advantage then just in the... Because you talked about, in grade 8, learning Latin and German and Spanish and in addition to French, which is great. I mean, this is just training your brain in new ways.
I can
this
read...
is an excellent
thing. I kept up with German through till the end of high school, and though I can't speak German, I can read German websites. Like, it helps me with some stuff like that, but... And I know learning different languages helps you think in different ways.
It does.
But,
So would you... Say, if you were in a position and you had children, would you undoubtedly send them to a private school,
if I,
right?
If I had I was capable of it, I absolutely would.
So in other words, you're in agreement. It's just a much better education.
I don't know. I went to school with people in university that went to public school, and they had far more drive than I did. And that the people that come out of public school and go to university and excel, those people are even, like, I don't think private school would have helped or hindered them necessarily.
Yes.
There's people that have drive.
Yes,
and private school forces that drive upon you. I was saying the reason why I went into private school is that I was in grade 7 and I was, or grade 8 or grade 6, and I was getting bad test scores and stuff like that. But it was kind of weird. Like, if I put in the effort, I'd get a great mark, and to the point where I had the standardized testing to see if I'd go into the gifted class. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I also, you know, I didn't study for stuff unless I was forced.
Part of that is just character.
Yeah.
So character plays a huge part. You were saying the kids who went through the regular public system could excel at university because some people are just driven to succeed.
Right.
Some people give in to their parents' pressure, especially the Asian community. You know, you have to get A's, you have to be at the top. See, that's something else. My parents never, ever pushed me. And part of the reason is neither of them. Well, my mother didn't finish high school. The Depression came. She was in a private school in Ottawa. And when the Depression came and suddenly there was no money at all, she was pulled out of this boarding school in Ottawa and went back. And then, so they just assumed, and as I've assumed my own children, I made a lot of mistakes bringing my kids up. I didn't know the world had changed so much in society. And I didn't realize that there are many more shitty teachers out there now.
Yeah.
Stronger unions, people who... teaching used to be a noble profession. Wow, the community looked up to teachers. I don't think the community looks up to teachers.
My grandfather was a teacher.
At all. And it was a real calling, wasn't it?
Yeah, he got... In fact, he got really offended at the state of teaching as time went on.
Yeah,
every time this teachers went on strike, he'd get all offended. Fuckers. He'd get all pissed off because he said, you know, he was in the war. He was, you know, he went and learned to be a teacher, and that's what he came to Canada from England, and he came to teach people, and he got upset, and it just. Right, I've never seen that man so mad as when there was a teacher strike, because he said, you know, you don't become a teacher to be a millionaire.
It's a calling, like the ministry or something else. But the number of people I've met who are going into university for teaching, they are going because they know they got a fabulous pension plan, they get big holidays, they've got a solid union contract, they're never going to get fired no matter how incompetent they are.
Mm.
They're in there. For good.
Yeah.
They got lifetime employment. They're set.
Yeah.
Well, fuck, that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a calling. You're supposed to go out there because you really love teaching. And I had a lot of assholes, I guess. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a... Yeah, even when I was in school, there were shitty teachers. I think there are more of them now.
Yes.
Than ever. And probably. I think they're failing the kids. They're failing our future. They're failing our children. I don't want to be in the soapbox here, but...
No, I as you were mentioning teachers and... I don't know, do you want to talk about the Toronto strike?
Which, let's finish off with the garbage strike.
Did that finish? I heard David Miller saying something.
No, he gave them an offer and said, hey, take this or else.
Yeah.
But no, it's still on, the garbage strike, and that...
I'm completely against unions.
Well, I'm especially against QP. I hate that fucking union.
Well, I'm against unions, and this is funny. Maybe I think we might have a source of disagreement here, because I think that unions create two tiers of workers.
And go ahead, explain that, please.
Because I think unions made sense in when you
had coal miners.
Yeah, when we were in the Industrial Revolution, and 14-year-olds were in factories.
Yeah, absolutely.
It made sense that you'd have to get a whole collective together and say, you know, we're not going to work unless you fix this.
And now we have garbage all over the city of Toronto because these guys are striking over sick days.
Yeah.
They're not talking about their health. They're not talking about their dying or anything else.
They're striking over
greed.
And just so, you know, the people that aren't in Toronto don't know this, there's the union of city workers, the people who, you know, clean up the parks and all that sort of thing.
The outdoor workers.
Outdoor workers are striking, and their key point of contention is they are allowed at this point to save the sick days that they don't use in a year and collect them so that when they retire, they get a payout.
Yeah.
To me...
A huge payout, or just they get
a huge payout. And to make matters worse, they get. I saw the stat. It was like something like twice as many sick days as a like Canadians. You know, on an average, are sick 9% of the year or something.
The
work year, and they have like twice as many sick days. So if they're already being given more sick days than a person, you know, on average. Should be using, then we're just giving them money.
We are, and that's the way they've bought the system.
But
now, what bothers me, and I've worked on a number of union jobs, and sometimes you get people who just like their work and do a great job. But I have seen so many jobs. Once you're in that union, you can slack off. It becomes a joke, and you know that the first time some guy gives you a hard time. You just go straight to your union rep and say, hey, this asshole's riding me. Get him off my back. And nobody has a love or a value for the work they're doing anymore.
Yeah.
And that's disgusting. And that's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
There's no professional pride. Even if you're... doesn't matter what your job is. Do the best job. Pay a decent wage.
We're at a point now where unions were created to... control the companies, and I think at this point we have fairly good labor laws, and maybe they need to be improved, I don't know.
Yeah.
Possibly. But I don't think the solution for fixing some holes in laws that exist now is if you're lucky enough to work at a place where there's enough people so that you can create a union, then to me that just creates...
Well, I hear
that's a detriment to people that are small businesses and entrepreneurs. Like,
well, it is. And the power, the muscle you're going to flex is we're going to go on strike. Now, to me, the whole concept of striking is outmoded. Surely there's got to be other ways of problem solving. My son basically blew his first year of university. Now, that's partly his immaturity, but a huge part of it was he lost three months of his first year of university when he was in residence with no classes.
Oh, he got stuck with a strike.
The York strike, Glendon. He failed his year.
Holy shit.
He's blown it. All that money is out of my fucking pocket. I paid for that this year.
Wow, my buddy just sent himself back to school.
Yeah.
Paid for it. Like he's been spending a long time trying to figure out what he wants to do. He finally figured out what he wanted to do. He was all gung-ho going back into school, paid for it out of his own pocket, and fucking York was on strike all semester.
It's a destructive force. Now, here's the last thing that came out today. The city workers say, okay, we can't have people building up all their garbage at home. There's going to be rats, raccoons, skunks, everything.
Problem.
It's a health problem. So they set up temporary garbage depots in parks and arenas. Well, of course, the neighbors are furious. You got the stink of garbage building up in your Christie Pits and other places. So I went to drop our garbage off at a hockey arena.
Yep.
There was a picketer sitting in deck chairs. They were just sitting there waving, enjoying the sun and chatting. They didn't do anything. You went inside. The guys wearing yellow shirts were actual management, who were the ones who opened your trunk, took the garbage out and piled it up, were extremely polite. The union workers wouldn't handle it. The managers are out there every day of the week handling the garbage under horrible conditions. And I applauded them for doing this, to at least give the citizens a place. Now the union said, okay, the QP said, hey, we're making it too easy. Everybody has to wait an hour before you get in. So what they've done, they're making old people driving a car to drop off the garbage sit in a line for an hour before they'll get up off their ass and let them in to drop off the garbage. Now, that is not going to win public support. That's just a stupid thing. Anyway, it drives me fucking nuts. And when you know when they get their contract back, they're not going to fucking work hard.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah. And having just got a new job and now being at a place where I'm happy to... I like what I do for a living, and I brought work home a couple times this week.
Everybody like what they do.
I didn't even care. I was enjoying it, and I don't... People that don't... Like, you don't have to enjoy your job, but people that have no work ethic...
You need a work ethic. And this is the key to this conversation. It's not just about unions. It's professional pride, personal pride, and a work ethic, which is something... This country was founded on, and it's gone. And the unions are the ones that have eroded this work ethic.
Well, I can't
really
believe
that.
Was the recorder on when I mentioned my grandfather being a teacher?
Yes, we've covered that.
Well, it's sort of this work ethic, this thing that he told me that the reason he came to Canada is when he came back from the war, he was in India flying planes there at the end of it. When he came back, he went to school and then figured out where he wanted to resettle to.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw a poster outside the Canadian consulate or whatever. And it said, Canadians work hard and they play hard. And he said, that sounds like the kind of place that I want to work and live. Those are the kind of people that, and that work hard and play hard is a life ethic almost.
It is.
I don't know. That's always spoken to me that,
I like that idea. Now, I know some people are going to beat up on us. Oh, you should give more fair to the unions. But this is bullshit. We're not talking coal mining days. We're talking about people who do not have to work all that hard, who have cushy lives, amazing benefits, and they're out there, the greedy bastards, saying, no, we need more. And it's partly because it's a mindset. If you look at the union leaders, if you look at those guys, it's entitlement, and it's just saying, hey, nobody pushes us around. We're the bosses. It's like a mafia.
Yeah, it is.
Fuck that, And I don't know. I mean, I know people would suffer if they privatized it, but God damn it. I think a few of these people should be fired. I would get rid of the union heads to start, but then, they'll accuse me of being a fascist, which I probably am.
You can be the least fascistic person I know.
I don't know.
You're a fascist hippie?
Yeah, I know it's a contradiction, but sometimes too much, being too understanding and too cooperative doesn't work.
Yeah,
and, I think we really have to come down hard on them. Fuck guys,
you're
get
a
back
little,
to work.
So what you're saying is you're a little more Churchill than Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you. That's a nice. That's a much nicer way of putting it. I like that. So I think we just about wrapped it up.
Yeah,
there.
I think so. I think we're at a good time. Yeah, another 20 minutes.
You've done it.
Yeah.
Folks, that was Gappage number 3, our 4th edition, and I think now officially we can actually go and advertise with the Canadian podcast, not the Buffet, but the whatever the
CanadaPodcast.ca. Come on.
And say,
I know
hey.
That.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I don't listen to the Buffet, and I didn't get to go to PAB, so this is what I'm thinking that...
But we have to suck up to Mark and Bob, because we want them to know that we've got a good show here.
I paid to go to PAB, so I'm just thinking that that's just my... You either listen to the CPB and spread the word, or you PAD comes along and you just buy a ticket, and that's
just, so you supported
that's,
there.
Yeah, wow, that's my. Well, I was planning on going, and it didn't end up, and I didn't even think to ask how to get my money back.
Well, that was very very generous because
that
contribution.
That's I don't listen to the CPB, but I'll support PAD. So.
Well, there you go. That's a very noble contribution. Boy, oh boy, that's almost like having corporate sponsorship.
Well, there you go.
All right, so that's another one. Stay tuned. I hope you like it. Listen, send us some comments. You can reach dicksandjanes@gmail.com, dicksandjanes@gmail.com, because it's going to come to the same guy. It's going to come to Ken eventually.
Yep.
And
my email is closetgeekshow@gmail.com, and if sending an email isn't your thing, then we got comments on the
we got comments on the
site as well.
All you have to do is Google Gappage, G-A-P-A-G-E. It's not Gappages, it's just Gappage, right?
Right.
G-A-P-A-G-E.
Yeah.
Age gap backwards.
Well, it looks like we're having trouble coming up with a single
Gappage. Well, unfortunately, there were no Gappages in this Gappage episode, but, you know, we managed to fill up the time.
Hope it was interesting.
I hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.